Is there anything that we can talk about, or is that off record?
No, by all means.
Okay. Okay.
Do you have that?
Yeah.
Where is it? Give me it. I'll hold it.
Okay. What we can do...
I want to
no. Yeah, but we are. This is just to get the information. We'd have to transcribe it, because you can't hear a damn thing here.
All right, but it's important to have it on tape.
Well, I think it's interesting, the fact that those stones... I've always been fascinated by the Baalbek story. I've never been able to go there. You know, for the years that I had top secret clearance, I would never be allowed to go there. They wouldn't even let me go to Berlin, for Christ's sake, when I was at Shape. You know, my kids, because of my clearance. You see, Europe was divided. I mean, Germany was divided.
Right.
There was East Berlin, West Berlin. My kids were able to go to West Berlin on a tour because they were in high school. I wanted to go to West Berlin. I wanted to visit the Brandenburg Gate. I was a number of them. I wanted to get into the Berlin Museum, but that was in East Berlin because that had the Lollendorf plate in it. That is an anomaly that is dynamite.
What's it called again? The Lollendorf plate.
And it was named after a Russian archaeologist who brought it back from Tibet before World War II began.
And when's it dated?
They can't date it, honey. It's a metallic
things like
substance that they can't even consider what it is. I've shown the Lollendorf plate in my presentations a number of times, and I have a slide of it, which I will be delighted to share with you and get a print made from it. The point is, the Lollendorf plate was an anomaly with a little gray on it and symbols all around. Lollendorf brought it back from Tibet in 1930 or somewhere back. And that's in the Berlin Museum in East Berlin. Well, it's now Berlin. But I couldn't even travel to Berlin while I was there.
I have a question for you, Bob.
Cosmic clearance.
In your speech, did I misunderstand you, or did you say that you had worked on aircraft carriers?
No, I have been on aircraft carriers. My son worked on aircraft carriers for 12 years.
Okay. So that was how you got on aircraft.
Yeah, I had two what they know as Tiger cruisers. Eric was at sea for 12 years. He served on four separate Nimitz class carriers. Twice when they had completed their tour in the Pacific, Mediterranean, they would come back to Pearl. They would restage, so to speak, at Pearl, and the entire air wing of the carrier would generally leave the carrier there at Pearl Harbor and fly directly back to Alameda to their air base. And then the ship would then proceed from Pearl Harbor on to Alameda in San Francisco Bay. And they would invite family members, crew members, to come aboard at Pearl Harbor and ride with them from Pearl Harbor to Alameda.
Great.
And they called these Tiger cruises. And I had the privilege of being on two of them.
How long does it take on one of those to go between the two?
They could make it in short time, but it takes about a week. They could make it in 3 days. Those damn carriers go so fast. That's another classified thing. No one knows how fast they can go.
We know they go fast.
Well, my son said one time they were playing with a Russian trawler in the Mediterranean. They were being shadowed. So the captain decided to play games with the Russian trawler. And they slammed this big nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, 1,000 feet long. Slammed it into high gear. Whatever they do.
Right.
And the bow rose somewhat. And
really?
This massive carrier throws up what they call rooster tails.
Really?
Really.
That's impossible.
Now, you know what a rooster tail is.
Yeah,
what
I do. Yeah, okay. Exactly.
This massive carrier throws up rooster tails.
Yeah.
And this thing goes, and they left the Russian trawler. Where the hell back? And the Russians, I'm sure, are sitting
What are they doing?
You know? And the captain of the carrier is playing the game.
Yeah, yeah.
No, they're not taking aircraft aboard and launching aircraft at this moment. Because they slow down.
Of course.
But they threw up rooster tails, and Eric says that it was really hilarious to be on the massive ship that he was on.
Yeah.
With 5,000 crewmen, for God's sake. Can you imagine that? With 5,000 crew.
Incredible to imagine. I mean, but you can't just do that with screw propellers, can you? They must be doing something else.
But that's special technology, isn't it?
Oh, well, they have nuclear power.
Well, yeah.
They have nuclear power.
No, but also, I mean, to part the water in front of you, isn't that the technology that Henry was talking about?
Yes, Henry
we
was
a witness
talking,
who talked about
they
this.
Didn't part the water. They just rose up and speedboat. They turned on the power with these nuclear reactors. And they have, I think, four enormous 12 or 14 foot screws back there. Now, can you imagine 12 and 14 foot screws? And there are four of them,
yeah.
Two on each side, and they're tied to two nuclear reactors. One reactor for two screws and another reactor for two screws. And then they give that, open it up, the power they've done. So anyhow, they walked away from the trawler, he said, and it was hilarious. No one knows what they'll do. Eric says, Pop, it's over 50 miles an hour on the ocean. Over 50 miles.
We heard, actually, that these things could do 80 knots.
I wouldn't doubt that for a minute.
I mean, which is very hard to believe.
Listen, did I share a Sunday? What this commander told me at the cookout in Whidbey Island? This anti-submarine warfare officer that I had a chance to meet, we were drinking beer and eating clams. This was when my son was assigned at Whidbey Island. His squadron was there. And Whidbey Island is off the coast of Seattle there in Puget Sound. Beautiful place, but there's this good-sized naval base there. And I'm visiting Whidbey Island at the time. It was kind of a sad story because my wife, Eric's mother, and I were in the process of getting a divorce. And we'd gone up there to share that with Eric to lay it out with why we were divorcing. Anyhow, during the cookout and the party, and we're all having a few, I bring up the subject, the submarine, the Soviet submarine threat. Because I've been reading about it, you know, and the Soviets have been building in massive Typhoon-type subs. And I asked the young man at the time, I said, are you guys able to stay on top of those things? I mean, can you keep them up? Do you monitor them well? And he was an anti-submarine warfare. And that's where the state of the art in those days was that they would drop these electromagnetic buoys. And then the boy would radio to the plane, and the guys are flying around in the plane, monitoring the boy, and the boy is telling them what's underneath. You know that story.
What year was this?
The early 90s. After 91, before 95, somewhere in
there. Okay.
So what did he say?
Anyhow, I said, are you guys on top of the Soviets? I mean, are you following them? He says, Mr. Dean, he says, the minute they pull out of harbor, we're with them all the way.
Right.
We monitor them from the moment they leave harbor until they go back.
Of course.
He says, the Soviets are no problem.
Yeah.
He says, they're big, they're lumbersome, they're good, they're fast.
We have a witness that says there's some submarines, though, outside the coast of California right now.
Well, there used to be Soviet subs on both coasts. They used to be on permanent station off the west coast, off the east coast. And every time they'd take up station, we'd know exactly where they were. And literally, if push had come to shove, we could have eliminated them immediately. And some of them are what they call boomers. They launch missiles. The Soviets got pretty good at it before then. Well, they're still good at it.
Sure.
You know, the SS-18 that I knew about before I retired from FEMA were I lived in Tucson, and the SS-18 had targeted Tucson because we had Titan missiles all around us there for a long time. But getting back to the story, I asked this young man, he said, are the Soviets a threat? He said, no, not at all. He said, we monitor them closely, we know where they are at any time. He says they show up big on our sonar, the whole nine yards. We had emplaced sonar devices all over the Atlantic and all over the Pacific. God knows how much it cost. Where we could monitor anything that was going wrong under the surface, on the surface. Like Denny Blair said one time, he said to a Chinese admiral, he says, I own the water and I own the air above the water. So don't talk threateningly to me. And Denny Blair at that time was a four-star admiral who was killed conscious of PACCOM, CINCOM Pacific, Commander in Chief Pacific, CINCPAC, I think they called it. Anyhow, I'm getting off the story.
Bob,
the young man, let me tell you.
Wait.
Okay.
Let me finish this.
Okay.
He says, the one thing that interests us the most that we cannot figure out, he says, are the underwater objects that are the size of aircraft carriers that are traveling over 200 miles an hour. And he says, that is our primary concern at the moment. He says, we don't know who they are, what they're doing down there, but he says they're traveling at enormous rates of speed underwater, and they're the size of aircraft carriers. And he says, some of our naval scientists are beginning to suspect that they're the cause of what you know of as rogue waves. He says, you know what a rogue wave is? He says, well, I've heard about them. They come out of nowhere, and they can turn ships upside down. On a calm sea, you know, there's nothing out there, and all of a sudden there's an 80-foot wave comes in, and if the ship doesn't hit it, prow on, and sometimes turn a good-sized vessel sideways, upside down. He says, but that troubles us. And this was in the early 90s. We don't really know what they are, who they are, or what they're up to. All we know is they're fast and they're big. And I said, well, I got a nagging suspicion of who they might be. But I'm not an expert. I'm not really quotable. I could tell you who I think they might be because I'd come out of the closet, as it were, in 91. And I was speaking to you about this phenomenon then. But that's a little tidbit today. I had my list of tidbits.
That's a lovely story. But if those were ET craft that can just go through the water like they can go through the air, it's just another fluid, it makes no difference, then you would expect them to be able to go much faster than that. They could go
probably
as fast as they wanted to.
Well, considering Bill, that they put a field around themselves.
Yeah.
Essentially, they are not part of the physical reality at that moment. They
yes.
are within a field that they have generated.
Yes.
And they do that out there.
Exactly.
And that field protects them, insulates them. And they can go as fast as they want within that field. And essentially what we're monitoring is the field moving.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay, you've done your homework.
Yeah. So actually, 200 miles an hour would be pretty slow compared to what their capabilities could be.
Well, that's what he shared with me.
And this admiral had how many stars?
Mm-hmm.
How many stars did this admiral you were talking to have?
At the time, this was a commander.
I don't know. Tell me the number
a
of
commander,
stars.
Commander? No, they don't wear a star.
Oh, they don't?
Admirals wear stars.
Okay. He wasn't an admiral.
No.
Is admiral above or below commander?
Well, let me give you a quick my kid entered the service as an ensign, a little gold bond. In the Army, we'd call that a second lieutenant. The next rank up is lieutenant junior grade, a little silver bar. In the Army, we call that first lieutenant. The next step in the Navy would be lieutenant commander. That's a little gold oak leaf.
Okay.
And in the Army, we'd call that a major. The next rank up in the Navy is commander, wearing a silver oak leaf. In the Army, we'd call that rank a lieutenant colonel. The next rank up in the Navy is captain, wearing a little silver eagle. Four stripes on it. In the Army, we call that a full colonel, a bird colonel. The next step would be brigadier general, one star. Major general, two stars. Lieutenant general, three stars. And general, four stars. The admiral in the Navy is rear admiral, one star. Rear admiral, second grade, two stars. Vice admiral, three stars. And full admiral, four stars. Okay, we got that on there.
Okay, thank you very much for that.
You're welcome.
We have gotten information from someone saying that they think there was some problem with the Navy's control of the ET situation sometime over the last year, where they seem to be losing ground or losing power within the factions, you know, Army versus Navy versus Air Force. Is that true? Because it doesn't ring true to me, but I wondered if you heard anything about that.
All I've known is from the very beginning of the whole damn thing that the Navy has been the primary service in this whole thing. And I don't know where it began. Probably back to the fact that the Navy recovered a UFO off the coast of San Diego in 1941.
And we've never heard that story. Can you elaborate on that?
A number of researchers were well aware of it. You know, you all hear about Roswell and all that hoop-de-doo about Roswell, and nobody seems to grasp that there wasn't one crash and retrieval. There were three crashes. And there have been crashes and retrievals all over the country, all over the planet for years. And the military even reached a point some years ago, which many of us who were in the service knew about, is that they didn't think they were crashing. They thought they were giving us hardware. Because in some cases, they found the object on the desert floor or wherever fully intact. And in some cases, there were the remnants of a crew aboard, and in other cases, the object was empty. No crew to be found. And they really began to be suspicious when they saw that. And they began to, a couple of them said, hey, it's all, they're giving us this part. They're handing us this right now. And in the cases of where there were little grays aboard, you may have heard me say this, but it's common knowledge among researchers, that there were little grays aboard, there were survivors. There were two or three dead, one or two were still alive. They hauled him off to, where the hell is it? Wright-Patterson. They had labs there at the time, and they got labs everywhere. There are labs up the road here.
Yeah, absolutely.
The point is that they kept expecting them to come back to retrieve their little crew.
Yes, and they should easily have been able to.
And of course, they could have done it any time they wanted.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And several cynics said, hell, they didn't give a damn one way or the other about retrieving that little guy. Because those little guys, in many cases, were not an evolved species. That they do, well, the crash in northern Germany in 1962. Timmendorfer Strand on the Baltic. There were 12 little bodies aboard. And the physicians who autopsied them said they were absolutely identical. And not one of them appeared to have anything that we could recognize as a reproductive organ. So they began to be suspicious that they might be laboratory products.
And expendable.
And the ones that they grabbed at Roswell and at Kingman and a couple of other places, you know, right down across the river over there in Kingman, Arizona, there was a crash.
Yeah.
They retrieved two of the guys who were alive.
Yeah.
They took them back. they kept thinking that they were going to come back and get them. And the cynics said, hell, they just wrote them off. It's like the joke about the potato chips. They went back and made more.
Yeah, yes.
Now that is...
It's interesting stuff.
I find that kind of sad, really. When you create an advanced creature that has the capability of functioning as a crew member of a ship. The question that I come up with, it troubles me somewhat from a spiritual point of view, is there a level of sentience in that creature? That someone would just write them off and let them go and leave them alone and forget it.
Well, our Mr.
And then
X
I had an experience in Southeast Asia when I found out. Excuse me. We left guys behind in Nam. Sorry, excuse me. We left them behind knowingly.
And they knew it going in.
And we signed this deal with the North Vietnamese. We had made a promise at the end when we began to withdraw from Vietnam. We were going to give the North Vietnamese a couple of $1 billion in reparations. Did you know that story?
No, I didn't.
We were going to give them a couple of billion, so-called reparations, for the damage we had done over Hanoi. Well, we never gave them a dime. Because our political people back in Washington got into a big knockdown, drag-out brawl and said, not only no, but hell no, we're not giving him anything. Well, when we said that, the North Vietnamese said, well, screw you. You can kiss your boys goodbye. And there were several hundred of them.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, and they're regarded as being less valuable than
they wrote them off like they didn't have any value. And I served for 27 years in the Army. I never met a man, Bill, in all my years of service that did not have value. And the idea we leave them behind, knowingly, and telling their next of kin that they're missing in action or they're killed in action. And those guys were in prison camps, alive, and could have been repatriated. Well, then, this commentary about these little graves began to make some sense. They wrote them off. They went back and made more. Well, if you want to be a total cynic, as I've almost tried to almost become over the years, we went back and made more. And some of the ones we made are now dying in Iraq. I have a grandson dying in Kansas. After his second tour in Iraq.
Oh, really?
His heart coming apart. His brain was scrambled.
What from? Do you know? What from?
An IED. One of those whatever they call it.
Yeah. Improvised.
Biowarfare.
IED. They're bombs. They blow up. They improvise them. They put them beside the road.
Improvised roadside.
Oh, an improvised explosion device.
Yeah, there you are. IED. Improvised. Anyhow, one went off right next to his personnel carrier. Killed a couple of his friends. Shook him up. His brain was bruised and damaged, but damage to his heart. The VA's got him under a complete care and support in a Kansas clinic. And my youngest grandson. Look, over the years, you see these things. We've got people in government, for God's sake, that are capable of almost anything. And I had these young women come up to me. Well, they're not so young anymore. Come up to me who have been grabbed and used in these experiments with that. You probably talked to some of them. They come up and share with me heartbreaking stories because they know that I can understand and I will be sympathetic or at least compassionate enough to listen to them. We've got a government, which I said Sunday, if you people think you know the government you've got, you don't know the government you've got. You talk about black government, shadow government, doesn't matter what term you use. There are professionals in power that function as government that no one ever elected. No, it's not responsible or accountable to anybody, to the House or to the Senate or to the President or to the American people. And many of them are in the intelligence agencies.
But, Bob, have you come across any overt Nazism in your experience?
Hell, yes.
Yeah.
Don't you know that NASA was formed by Nazis?
Well, we do, actually.
Well, that's fairly common.
I just wondered
you just never
what
realized
you came
how
across.
Vast it was.
All right.
You didn't realize how. You all know about Werner von Braun.
Yeah.
Werner was just the number one guy. There were at least a dozen, if not more.
Did you know any of
Nazis
them?
Who were brought in under paperclip, and many of them were prosecutable, who should have been held up in front of the Nuremberg trial. And we had them here, and we gave them high pay, bought them beautiful homes, brought them and their families, and they worked for the NASA program for years. Well, it wasn't merely NASA. We had a number of them working in Central Intelligence. As a matter of fact, the CIA was an offshoot of an old organization.
The OSS.
Strategic Service. That was built on a Nazi profile. That was built on a Nazi plan. And the old OSS had a whole bunch of Nazis in it. So that when the war was over, we had plane loads of Nazis being flown out of Germany, for Christ's sake, to the United States, being treated like celebrities. The only thing is, it never came out. Their names. We brought Nazis with their families. And there's this big joke going around. Oh, there are Nazis in Argentina. Bullshit. There are Nazis in Washington, D.C. There are Nazis in Hollywood, in Beverly Hills. But most of the old guys are gone now. But their heirs are alive and well. Many of them are in government. And if I were to have my notes at hand, I could probably name a few for you. I got up in front of you. Were you there? Didn't you see me Sunday?
Yes.
I stood up and I held this folder filled with... There's my notes.
Yes.
I didn't even get one third of the way through there. I wanted to share another tidbit with you while I think about it, because you know, my mind at this stage. You push my button and I go dancing around here. The point is, there was another piece of information I found tremendously interesting. A researcher by the name of Tellinger, South Africa.
Michael Tellinger.
You know Michael.
Not personally, but I've
oh, he's brilliant.
Listened
he's
to
brilliant.
His story and seen his stuff. Yeah.
Well, if you heard the story he's telling now about South African archaeologists have discovered what they think are Anunnaki laboratories.
Yeah.
Adjacent to an ancient gold mine.
That's 70,000 years old.
At least.
Yes.
I find that interesting.
That's interesting stuff.
Now, what a laboratory would look like to an archaeologist after 70,000 years, I can't imagine. But the very word was used. Tellinger said that apparently they've discovered what appears to be the remnants of an ancient laboratory adjacent to an ancient gold mine. And I didn't hear the term 70,000 years. I just heard it was ancient.
Oh, no, it's at least 70,000 years old.
Really?
It's what I heard was about a year ago, they found some clearly artificial stone structures. That were so old that the mainstream archaeologists couldn't believe that they weren't natural. But if you look at them, you've got what Dellinger describes as South Africa's Stonehenge.
Or older.
Or, oh. Yeah, much older.
As colorful as Stonehenge is, that's not that big. There are things out there. You know, familiar with Nabt the Playa, the site in Egypt?
No, I'm not.
In southern Egypt, Nabt the Playa. Oh my God. They've discovered remnants of what was apparently a calendar in the desert.
A calendar,
a stone calendar that's laid out in the desert at a place in southern Egypt. West of the Nile, I'm trying to place how it is according to. Where's the dam?
The Aswan Dam.
Yeah.
It's south of Aswan and west of the river. And they found this site called Nabt the Playa, Playa. And they've estimated the age of this thing 150,000 years, perhaps. But it's a stone calendar. And when they photographed it and measured it and checked it out, they've done that. There's a book out called The Origin Map.
Right.
Okay, I don't know, I can't remember the name of the author. But you can find the book, The Origin Map. This stone calendar, apparently, has a detailed map, not only of the solar system, but the galaxy.
Oh,
it maps the galaxy. And they can determine the age of it because by taking and computerizing what they found, location and placement, they can age it by going back. And that's when they figured it was over 100,000 years old.
Yeah,
a map of the galaxy. Get the book, The Origin Map.
Okay, gotcha.
The writer escapes me. It's dynamo. Find the book, read the book, and then find the author and interview him.
Right.
Okay. What an interview that would be.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob, I want to ask you a question. We saw Sitchin in L.A.
Yeah.
And he said to the audience, an audience member asked him, if the reason we went into Iraq was because of the Anunnaki. And he hemmed and hawed, and then he finally said, yes.
Is this bothering you?
No, I'm okay.
He said yes?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, what
surprised.
Do you know about that?
Yeah.
What his exact words were, because I have a good memory for details of conversations. The question was, is the war in Iraq connected in any way with the Anunnaki? And he paused for a long time. And then he said, this answer is full of landmines, but yes. And then he didn't say anymore.
That old codger, I have tremendous admiration and respect for him.
Yeah.
But he, I'm not at all surprised.
What did he mean?
Well, let me tell you what he might have meant. I can tell you from what limited knowledge I have. I can tell you that most of the gang that tore apart and went through the Baghdad Museum were our people.
Of course.
Well, you know that.
Well, we figure.
That's been heavily surmised by people trying to figure out what was really going on. Yeah.
Sure. Oh, yes. Yeah. They were our people.
Yeah.
And that lieutenant colonel or colonel, that marine colonel that we put there in charge of the museum, you know what I'm talking about?
I don't.
We put a marine colonel in charge of the museum to look after it and hopefully regain all of the stuff that had been looted and to safeguard it after the mob had left.
Yes.
Well, that loot. This is probably going to get my ass in a jam, but that marine colonel knew exactly who those people in that mob were.
Okay.
And they went in that museum and they walked away with specific items.
Specific items.
That they had a list.
They never had it, yeah.
Of what to bring back from that museum.
Yeah, shopping.
And so much of what was stolen, irreplaceable, worth its weight in gold.
But the question is, they took it.
Cylinder
stones.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, Dan Burish says that we have the looking glass technology on those cylinder stones. And that's time travel technology that you can get off the stones.
Harry,
and that
when
there's
you
a
travel,
stargate underneath.
When you travel in space, you travel in time. You cannot separate space-time. Space-time, time-space, space-time. It's all the same. You cannot travel out there without traveling in time. That time is not at all what we think. And you've heard this again and again and again, and I've been working to try to get my mind to wrap around it, and I can't. But that yesterday and today and tomorrow, it's all the same. There's only one eternal hour.
Yes.
Now, I can't wrap my poor old brain around that. Perhaps you can. You ought to interview this guy sometime.
Oh, we're going to.
Don't put him on. Don't let him do the interview. You interview him.
Okay.
Because I've already intuitively picked up on this dude that he knows a hell of a lot more than he's ever shared with anybody. I bring something up and he knows all about it already. So
his poor old nimble brain should draw the crowd, doesn't it?
Anyhow. Where were we? Oh, we were at Nabta Playa.
No, we were in Iraq.
Oh,
in
the cylinder field.
And the Anunnaki.
Yeah, well, look, honey, I said this Sunday, didn't I? The Anunnaki are all around us. It was that crew that met Ike in 54 at Nimuroc. That was the Anunnaki. The same group that built Ur. It is the same group that built the ziggurat that poor old John Paul II wanted to visit before he died.
I don't know even a quarter of I don't even know an eighth of what you all know and understand. But as you're talking about this, I seem to recall someone somewhere sharing with me that the indigenous people all over the world are starting to have people visiting, trying to dig up their sites, and they are looking for technologies. I am under the impression from my contact that I've had that part of this is, the reasoning behind it is that there's an ultimate device that they are trying to find all of the parts for that are all over the earth. What do you know about that?
Who's doing the digging?
I'm not sure what group it is that's doing the digging, but it's definitely an, you know, an organization.
A national entity.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, I'm not surprised. I wouldn't be at all surprised that they have learned that there are knowledge of ancient societies, traditions. You know, just to give you a brief example of the Dogon in Africa, who knew all about what the hills, the planet, and the star are.
Sirius.
The dog star.
Sirius. Sirius A and Sirius B. We didn't discover Sirius B until, what, 30 years ago. And the Dogon knew about it.
Anyone about it?
Yeah.
Thousands of years.
I mean, that's a tiny example. The Nabta Playa thing out there in the desert. The stuff that was rifled out of the museum in Baghdad.
What about the idea of a stargate in Iraq?
I don't think it's there anymore. Because they don't need it. Stargates can be opened at any time, at any place, by them, at their choosing. They open a portal anytime they want. And if you don't believe me, read the Search for the Skinwalker. You know who George Knapp is? I hope you interview him.
He's Skinwalker Ranch.
The Skinwalker Ranch up in Utah.
Yeah, I've heard him speak about it.
Bob Bigelow, who I've known for some years, billionaire in Vegas, paid out of pocket to establish a research center up there at the Skinwalker Ranch for years and years and years. And the book that George Knapp and the British scientist, I can't remember the young man that worked with, was under contract with Bigelow for many years. The name's escaping. The Skinwalker Ranch story was just a tiny tip of a large iceberg. That particular location apparently was a site selected by them, or some of them. And they come and go off that particular location and been doing it for centuries. The Indians have these stories that go back hundreds of years of the others coming through these doorways. Well, they open the doorways anytime and any place they want. I don't think there's anything left in Baghdad or in Iraq. I could be wrong. There could be something underground that hasn't yet been dug up yet. I know that we've had a team over there digging like hell in Earth.
Exactly, yeah.
I know that I had the newspaper article, and I've got it with me, from the New York Times, poor old John Paul wanting, asking, for God's sake, can you asking Saddam Hussein for permission to make what the Vatican considered a holy...
What was the word of that?
Pilgrimage.
A holy pilgrimage to Earth.
That's as weird as it gets, isn't it?
Now, when you consider the meaning of, first of all, pilgrimage and holy, and this was in the release, the Vatican said this, a holy pilgrimage to Ur before he died. And he asked Saddam Hussein for permission, and the son of a bitch turned him down, wouldn't allow him to come. But the point is, what motivated John Paul II to want to make his pilgrimage to Ur?
Yeah.
Could it have been the information that McIntyre gave to Pope Pius II because of the event that happened up at Lurok in 54?
Yes.
Well, we have information the Vatican's also had visitations from a certain group.
Oh, listen, they have. Of course. I've got it in my file. I wanted to get to it Sunday and didn't have time. I have had a good friend in Rome, Cristoforo Barbato.
He's a friend of yours.
Yes, I've known Chris for years.
We've been trying to interview him.
Oh, he's a dear young man. He's bright and delightful and... I consider him a good friend.
He told us he didn't speak English.
Oh.
Is that
I guess we'll leave that out.
Well, he's not. Excuse me, Chris, I'm sorry.
But that's great.
He doesn't speak it that well.
Okay.
He may not
but
write
he
it.
He understands it.
He doesn't write it.
Okay, fine. Okay.
Okay.
That's true, actually.
All right. You've talked to Chris.
No, we haven't. We spoke to Lucas Cantambola.
We've exchanged
Lucas
emails.
Lucas is supposed to be here.
Luca?
With Christopher.
Luca is supposed to be here. Get with.
We need to find out whether Luca's here before we go. Okay.
He's not on the list to speak.
No, he's not on the list to speak. Paula wouldn't know.
Yeah, or talk to Paula. Okay. Talk to Paula, because I think...
Brown, I mean,
yeah.
Okay,
or,
so what is Cristoforo
anyway
telling you? I mean, he knows all about Nibiru. Is he part
of... Chris has gotten most of his information from a couple of close friends who are Jesuits. And I've known Jesuits for years. I used to sit and drink and have big parties with Jesuits when I ran an officer's club in Nuremberg years ago during the occupation. And the Jesuits are the scholars of Catholicism.
Yeah.
And they not only run the intelligence service, which I jokingly said Sunday is probably one of the world's finest, if not the finest.
Yes.
Because every damn Catholic priest in the world is a member of the, feeding information into the intelligence service.
Yeah.
So the Vatican's got unpaid agents all over the damn place. Anyhow, Chris has got this connection with these Jesuits in Rome. And they're members of this, apparently, this Vatican security organization. And they reached out to him. He didn't reach out to them. They reached out to him.
Yes.
It's happened to me time and time again over my years.
Yes.
And they wanted him to, because they knew he had people who listened to him. He had connections within the UFO community, as it were. And they wanted him to know that they are deeply, deeply involved with the 10th planet.
Yes.
and that the Vatican is deeply concerned about it.
Is there a chance it's disinfo, planted purposely?
Oh, you always have to face that. That you happen in intelligence operations over the years, you always have the problem of disinformation. Our authorities are good at it. There's always that possibility, but the problem is that when in such things, I mean, you learn to sift and weigh and evaluate, and you check other sources, and you compare this source with that source, and you try to end up intuitively grasping for yourself, is there any validity to this? And after a time, and you work at it, and you learn after a while to get pretty good at it, because you develop your own inner gut feeling, which they call intuition, that this is good and that ain't. And I've learned over the years the hard way to weigh and sift and figure out what was right. I think the story is basically true.
Okay.
I've assumed.
Does Barbato think it's true?
Chris thinks it's true.
Okay. But he's gone into hiding. We were told they tried to get him fired from his job. In fact, he lost his job. He couldn't get another job. Did you hear that? He writes for magazines, and they closed him down, so he was talking too much.
Chris has had his bumpy roads along the way, and I don't want to put this on tape.
All right. But isn't this the Vatican's tactics? You know, they broke into our car when we were parked in the Milan airport.
I'm not surprised.
And it was right after we talked to Lucas Scantamirla. They thought we had something. They thought he'd given us something. He didn't give us anything. But he was talking about Nibiru.
You realize what a dynamite subject this is to the Vatican?
Oh, yeah. By the way, the Vatican is a very interesting place.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, they wouldn't let me in.
Have you been there?
Because there last night, my visions.
I was denied access.
I'm meeting you.
We'll talk later, okay?
I hope I didn't say something too offensive.
Not at all. I can feel someone calling me back to that room.
I've got to get it too.
I just want to say thank you because this is the first time I've had an opportunity to meet you, and I understand now why people think so highly of you. You are always weighing the possibilities, and it's such an important aspect to keep in this field. And I just want to say thank you.
Let me say one thing in closing.
Yes.
It's all a spiritual matter. You know that.
That's the only thing.
It has nothing to do with guys coming and going from different places.
It has nothing to do with it. And Carrie and Bill are supporters of that fully.
They know that.
And that is what I talk about to everyone that gives me the opportunity to do so. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I would love to stay, but I feel someone calling me back to that
you
room.
Need to watch our interview with him. We've got two very long interviews.
Yes.
Fabulous.
Okay, I will watch all of them in detail. And the only other thing to say in closing is that there's mining going on all over the planet, and everyone has this idea that it's being done for gold and silver and all of these other matters. But I have a feeling that that actually is not what's going on, and that if you take a look at the locations where all of this pit mining is going on or where they're trying to go, a lot of these areas are sacred places, and I believe it is because they were trying to find the way underground, not just to an underground base or to create one, but to the actual underground. And they're trying to see if it's real. That's what they're trying to do.
Well, if they wanted to ask me some advice, I would tell them to go to Mount Hayes, Alaska, and just try to start mining. You know what's under Mount Hayes? I'm sorry.
I know what's
I'm teasing you.
A base?
There is a major ET facility under Mount Hayes in Alaska.
Well, I know that they've been in certain areas where they've been trying to get to, and I personally know of at least two locations where there are bases underground, three actually, and that I've never talked about ever, and I won't share that publicly.
But I do know of three locations, and that they've been trying for years to get mining into those areas, and they've been stopped every time.
The hell with it. They're not going to succeed. If they dig in the wrong place, they're up the creek.
They are. Yeah. They're totally up the creek. Yeah.
If they were to try mining at Mount Perdido in the Pyrenees, they would run into a real mess.
How do you know this, Bob? About Mount Tate? Where did that information come from?
From a variety of sources. You know, there's one remote viewer that I probably evaluate and trust.
I want to catch up with you later.
I'll see you
later. Thank you. Have a good trip.
Thank you.
And I'm here to testify that Bob Dean is alive. He is not dead again.
Oh, that's a rumor. That's only a rumor. You've got to interview Ringo Spock.
Oh, you know it. I love the guy. I mean, we were trying to, interview him for a long, long time. I think he's the best. He's the best out there.
Let me tell you a little vignette here. And then I have to go to the gentleman's lounge because I'm in need of a flash of illumination. And I have to go to the men's room to get it, you see. Ingo was taken to Mount Hayes by a chap by the name of James Axelrod, who at the time was the director of special programs in the CIA. James Axelrod, I don't know, James may be dead now. Obama's got an Axelrod in his staff. I don't know whether they're related or not. Could be. But James Axelrod was the director of special programs in CIA for some years ago. Took old Ingo after interviewing him, using him, asking him to assist them in some of their remote viewings, which he did. Gave them information on the moon. Blew them away. The point is, they took Ingo up to Mount Hayes to purposely demonstrate and show him the coming in of a massive ET ship. And they watched it materialize over a lake.
I heard that story.
At the base of Mount Hayes.
I heard that story. Yes.
Okay. Now, Ingo didn't at the time know where the hell he was, or didn't know where Mount Hayes was, or anything like it. The ship materialized, and it came in through time.
Yes.
It wasn't just a spaceship. It was a time ship.
Yes.
And Axelrod did it purposely to show Ingo what they were dealing with. And if you want to know about the underground bases, the guy who first began to find out all about them was Price.
Pat Price.
That's gone for years now. He was a cop. Love to have known him. My kind of guy.
Yeah.
Pat was the one. They said that they had never encountered a remote viewer as accurate as Price. He came up initially with these locations, and he came up with four of them. One in Pine Gap, the other one in Mount Perdido, the other one underground in Zimbabwe.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Well, I've got notes. I've even got map photographs of these locations in my file. Hayes in Alaska, Perdido in the Pyrenees, Pine Gap, Zimbabwe. I've learned from my connections with intelligence and the Navy people primarily that there's a major ET facility, one of them in Puerto Rico, and there is a massive undersea location off Puerto Rico in a place called the Puerto Rican Trench.
Yes, which is very deep.
Yeah, they're actually filming. I don't know if it's Jaime or someone else. There's a filmmaker who films UFOs. The evidence of UFOs going in and out of the water right?
Well, apparently they come in a lake, and they come out of a lake in Puerto Rico.
Yes.
There's a place called Cabo San Lucas, I think, in Puerto Rico. Which
Cabo
is just,
San Lucas is in Baja.
Well, maybe
it's the same.
Apparently, maybe I'm wrong, but it sounds like Cabo San Lucas. But there is a major ET facility there. And the one that I find most intriguing is the major U.S. ET joint operation in Kwajalein. Hato in the Pacific.
Yes, I've heard that. Kwajalein.
We have a joint facility there on Kwajalein with them. I would say probably the same group.
Which group?
The Anunnaki.
The Anunnaki.
Yeah.
The Anunnaki meaning the tall.
Well, that's generic, I mean.
I mean, because some of these bases are gray bases.
Well, there are two grays, you know. There are two groups of grays. There are grays that appear to be an evolved species. You know, they bleed, they reproduce like we do. They're almost human in the sense that they're 5 feet, sometimes taller, 5.5. They're fairly. Their skin's not gray. It's kind of an off-white.
But their agendas.
They have round
are
eyes.
Different.
And they are apparently benevolent people.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
But so are the ones supposedly from the Pleiades. Are they benevolent?
Yes.
The indications we've received from people that I say I trust is that.
Just there are some that are not. So
listen,
it's
there
important
are different
to make
groups
the distinction.
With different agendas. And they're not in total agreement with each other. However, thank God, thanking the big chief for this, there are at least two groups, perhaps three, that are supportive of us, that would like to see us survive as a species.
Yes.
And they appear to be working together.
Yes.
Although they may have separate agendas, they do have an agreement or an understanding among themselves that they're going to have to help bring the human race through our transition.
Yes.
Which is not easy.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. There are different groups with different agendas. I've been told that they all have their own agenda.
Yes.
And some of them are not so nice.
Right.
Yes. We have encountered some that are not nice at all. I don't mean to say that they are purposely malevolent. They just don't like human beings. They look upon us like the commander told me the two he worked with over outside of Nellis. They're working with us, they respect us, they know that we have a potential to be better than we are. They want to see us make it. But there are others that couldn't care less whether we make it or not. They are so advanced, apparently, not only technologically, but spiritually and socially, they're at a point where they have very little compassion for us as a primitive species. Now, how much compassion do we show to chimpanzees in the zoo? How much compassion do we show to monkeys in the wild?
Yes.
How do we show compassion to the bonobo or whatever you call it? That group of chimps that are apparently one step beyond regular chimps?
Yes.
The bonobo, is those the ones that walk upright?
Yes.
How much compassion do we show to them? We put needles in them, we put them in laboratories.
Okay, but a lack of compassion is a lack of evolution.
Yeah.
You know, species, regardless of how evolved.
Yeah. Just because you're technologically smart doesn't mean to say that you're
exactly
right.
They don't go together necessarily.
The name of the game is it's a spiritual game in the final analysis. And they're not winning that game just because they're technologically evolved.
No, they're not.
Yeah.
And that's why they're here, part of the reason.
It could be why that they don't like us very much, because human beings appear to have a spark.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Humans have a spark of divinity within. Now, I'm not saying this, and I'm not telling you with any authority, but I'm telling you there could be species out there that do not have that spark of divinity. And the question is, do they have a conscience? And the theological people will say, do they have a soul? Hell, I don't know. I've often wondered whether I had a soul. And until I began my remote viewing and had my out-of-body experiences, I was never quite certain of it. But I do know now. Yes, indeed, I do have a soul. And so do you.
And I know that, for sure.
I know you know that.
Bob, I want to ask you two quick questions, because we have to go, and so do you. One question is about Ike and Mirok in 1954. Was there another meeting at Holloman?
Yes.
Because some people talk about Holloman as
well. Yeah.
So there are two meetings. One was at Mirok and one was at Holloman.
Yeah. Follow-up.
Which one was first? Mirok was first?
Mirok, I think, was the first one, 54.
Yeah.
I think Holloman was 52, 53, maybe. Oh. You know, Michael Sala has a list.
Okay.
You followed him. You saw his presentation. I don't know whether that's totally accurate or not. It may be.
Yeah.
But there have been meetings at several bases over the years at different places.
Yes.
And we're not all with the same group.
Of course, yes.
There's a rumor and a story that I've heard repeatedly from different sources, which I think makes at least some validity to it, that Kennedy met a group from the Pleiades.
Right. Oh, really? I had not heard that.
That Kennedy met the tall blondes.
Okay. That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Well, that makes sense.
Well, it all seems to fit, doesn't it?
That's great.
There, this is an enormous jigsaw puzzle.
Yeah.
And you start putting it all together and you think, oh my God, look at that picture. I think that does make sense. I think Jack Kennedy met this group, the tall blondes. Now, whether that was a contributing factor to his death, I don't know.
Okay.
I do know the rumor continually surfaces that he planned total disclosure before he died.
Yeah.
There are people even suspect that was the reason he was killed.
Yes.
Yeah.
The wise men. You heard my term.
The wise men.
Yes. Yeah. The magi.
Yeah.
Right.
Didn't want it because it wasn't time.
Are you aware that there's a change in the magi? You know, in basically that whole group that they've gone through a transition, and they have different leaders now.
Funerals have taken their toll on the magi. As they used to say, progress is measured by one funeral at a time. You heard that?
Yes.
That was
Max Planck who said that. Yes, that's right.
The old scientists drop dead and the new scientists come out with a broader view and an open mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, the magi has changed several times. The last I heard from sources, my friend at the Arlington Institute, now about 40 of them. When they meet at the country club there in Virginia, they need more tables and chairs now. They meet annually, supposedly.
Yes.
As I jokingly say, it's not a country club, it's
the country club.
And an old retiree friend who's at death's door used to run that place. He ran the bar, he's in the dining room.
Incredible.
And I asked him one time, why the hell do you do that? Knowing what the hell they're up to. And he honestly said to me, he said, let me tell you, he says, either one of us is stupid. He says, the perks are good. He says, I eat anything I want, anytime I want. He says, I smoke the very best cigars that are air delivered to us here from Cuba. The finest cigars, as good if not better than what Castro smokes. He says, we're drinking the finest scotch we can get from Scotland. And he says, it's so good that the Scots don't export it and sell it. They drink it themselves.
Right.
And he says, we get cases of it from Scotland. He says, now here I am. He says, you old fart. This was some years back. Told me, you like bourbon. I like scotch. He says, so I've got the best cigars. I got the best scotch. I got steaks, and I got a place to live. He says, and I'm living in a comfortable suite at the country club. So all my bills are paid. And he says, my pension goes into the bank and I never touch it. He says, why the hell wouldn't I do this? Well, you would too if you were given the chance. And I jokingly said, is there an opening? Is there another job? I'll work for you, you old bastard, you know? We served together. We were in Korea together.
Incredible. Did he know anything about what was discussed in those meetings, or was he not?
He had a vague idea of the agenda. Yeah, they discussed. You hear these rumors about, I forget them. They call themselves the Bilderbergers. Then another group, the Council of Foreign Relations.
Yes.
You find these wise men on all of those groups. They're members of all of them, and there's another third group that I can't remember.
The Trilateral Commission.
The Trilateral, yeah.
And they're represented on all of them.
Yeah. Yes.
And they literally, I don't know whether this is true. I hate to go, I gotta run. I don't know. They said to me, they pick who runs for election.
Yeah.
Who's ever in the White House has been approved.
Yeah. They will be straight out.
And I look at this young man, this bright young kid there that's literally 1600. Has he been approved? Obviously he has. And if he hasn't been, God bless him. Because I hope his Secret Service people are on their toes. Because if Obama tries to pull anything at all that is not in accordance with their agenda, he's up to the creek.
Well,
and you may quote me.
We'll quote you. Just a little bit of interest, just a tidbit for you here. We met somebody who met Obama in the 1980s when Obama was 20-something years old. And he said that at that point, Obama knew that he was going to be president.
He'd been selected.
Yeah.
He has shown that confidence over the years.
And but what was really interesting, it wasn't that he knew he would be in for a shot at the presidency. He knew he would be president.
Well, that's what my old buddy told me. Yeah. He said that they picked them.
Yeah.
And if they get to the office, they've been selected. Yeah. Now, what Jack Kennedy did, I don't know.
Yeah.
I know Jack was put in there primarily by his old man's money.
Yeah.
Now, whether he changed his plans while he was in office, I have no idea what happened there. Jim Mars has got it all in his book.
But Crossfire.
I'm not surprised. You know, I've learned enough about the program and the process and the shadow government and the ones who really call the shots. And I say to the people on Sunday, I see the government, you think you've got, not the government, you've got.
Exactly.
That I wouldn't be surprised, Bill, whether they're pulling the shots there, that they're selecting. It wouldn't surprise me because I know the same damn progress is going on in the Vatican.
Yes.
They pick the present pope.
Of course. Yeah.
The Kraut, who had been a member of Hitler's youth when he was a kid.
Yeah. It's a rigged game.
It's a game.
It's a rigged game.
And we're all chess pieces.
Yeah.
And they move us around.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And I learned that I had been moved around before. Well, I learned it finally in the end.
Yes, of course.
When I worked for this colonel in Special Operations, I knew then that I was a mere chess piece.
Yes.
That was when the beginnings of my old world view began to crumble. It started when I learned about the assessment.
Yes.
And my old world view is gone. My old paradigm, I swept it away.
Yeah, of course.
My new worldview is in a process of being formed and firmed up, and we're discussing that right now.
Yes. And your mission, which is ours also, is to help people let go of their worldview.
Bill, I have been flat told to get my ass, and it wasn't merely myself, it's come from a number of sources.
Oh, wow.
You old fart, get off your dead ass and stop sitting there stewing in your own juices. Get the hell back out there and talk about what you've been shown and the things you've been told. And I said that repeatedly. The reason I'm getting away with some of the things I'm getting away with is that somebody there wants me to do what I'm doing.
Exactly.
Good. And I'm to a point, Bill, now, without becoming religious here, where I honestly don't believe that I've got good friends in high places.
Us too.
Absolutely.
Well, still here.
We're right there with you.
Let me tell you something. You could not be accomplishing what the two of you are doing.
Absolutely.
Unless what you're doing has been approved and encouraged by someone.
Yeah.
We've been told we have protection.
I'm not surprised. Well, I have. The reason I'm here, honey, is that I've had a charmed life.
I know. Yeah. Well, they chose well,
me too,
didn't they?
Well, I look at you, and I think you're a pretty good-looking chick. Yes, I think they chose pretty well. No, I'm not at all. I'm so surprised that you associate yourself with all these scoundrels like this one here.
This is going in the transcript.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. This has been great. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
You guys are leaving, I understand.
Yeah, we're on our way
out. We're on our way out.
Well, it's always a pleasure to see both of you.
It's a great pleasure, Bob. Thank you so much.
I feel like you're almost family now.
Yeah.
Well, it feels like that. It feels like
that. Then give all our love to Marshall.
I will indeed. And you take care. Where's your next stop?
We're going to Sedona right now.
Are you?
And we'll do some editing there, and then he goes back to Europe, and I go to California.
Well, how long are you going to be in Sedona?
A little over 2 weeks.
Oh, well, you have time to grab Peter Gersten.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he lives there.
Well, I've met his wife, but I know Peter, Stephen Bess. Oh, I
not
thought
unless
they were
he married her. I don't know. Okay. They were living together. They lived in the same apartment complex. I lived
that's
in
a good,
for a year.
You know him?
Oh, I've known Peter for years.
Okay.
Well, you have to grab that one.
All right.
Yes.
Peter
that's
is
good
the
idea.
He's one of the guys who said of me, and I always appreciated the compliment. He said, Bob Dean is the only UFO researcher who never had a negative thing to say about any other UFO researcher. He said, Bob, I've never heard you say a negative thing about anybody. I said, well, you just haven't been listening closely. I said a few, but anyhow, get a hold of Peter Gersten.
All right.
It would be worth it.
Okay. I hear you. Okay,
I'll
take your advice.
So listen, guys, be safe, huh?
Oh, we'll be safe.
Well, you've got good friends in high places.
And we have. Yeah. Yeah. And if you ever have a chance to talk to the guy upstairs, tell him that we appreciate him taking care of us.
I speak to him regularly. An open line is not better than the Pope.
I think you do.
Well,
I think you do.
What is it?
Well, the Pope may be talking to somebody else. We don't know that.
Well,
well yeah, that's
I would jokingly almost surmise. Well, I will surmise that the Pope has representatives in PI 40. He's got representatives in the wise men who meet in the country club.
Yeah. I mean, he must
that's
have.
What we hear.
He must
but
have.
But that may not be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, how it's weighed. You know, good thing, bad thing. The overall picture is in the middle.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll see you guys later.
All right, take care.
Take care, Bob.